Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
Hi, I'm Frances Anderton. Thank you very much for listening to DNA. Just like the designs we spotlight on DNA, great care and creativity is taken in producing the stories on Unfictional. Intimate storytelling and artful documentaries crafted by some of the most talented radio producers across the world. Check it out, you'll enjoy it. Find Unfictional on KCRW's iTunes page. Hi, I'm Frances Anderton, and this is KCRW's DNA. You may have owned one of his whimsical kettles, but perhaps the greatest contribution by Michael Graves was his design for the disabled.
In the course of time, I found out that American hospitals are not what they are cracked up to be. And so I thought of all the things I can do in the rest of my life, I ought to be able to take on health care.
The architect Michael Graves died earlier this month at age 80. We'll remember him later in the program. First up, though, should a building with a difficult history stay or go? That's the question currently being asked about one of our civic buildings.
I am standing in front of beautiful Parker Center in downtown Los Angeles, about a block from City Hall.
Cindy Olnick is with the Los Angeles Conservancy, and we met her in front of the once crisp, boxy, modern edifice that now looks rather forlorn. This was for over half a century the headquarters of the Los Angeles Police Department, and it was named for the famous but controversial police chief, William H. Parker.
This building is a highly potent symbol of law enforcement in Los Angeles. We think this is a perfectly good building. It's highly important. It's a very important piece of our history, and we want to see it reused.
I'm a big believer in historic preservation when it's warranted. The issue is, when is it warranted and when is it not? To me, the building doesn't ride to a standard of beauty that is important to my aesthetic taste. And we're talking about Chief Parker. You know, he wasn't a nice guy.
There was Cindy Olnick, followed by Hal Bastian, who has spent many years working on economic development for the Downtown Center Business Improvement District. You'll hear from them and others in a moment. Before we get to them, though, let's get to grips with what's going on here. We're talking about a building that had closed its doors for good 2 years ago when the last stragglers left the building, and this sign-off was recorded for the LAPD's finest.
Parker Center has served and protected the men and women of the Los Angeles Police Department with distinction for 54 years. Parker Center, on behalf of Chief Charlie Beck and all LAPD personnel, thank you for your steadfast service through more than half a century of the best and worst times in Los Angeles. You are now end of watch.
Parker Center was considered a landmark in its heyday. It was designed, says Cindy Olnick, by
one of the best, Welton Beckett and Associates. They helped define Los Angeles after World War II. Everything from Cinerama Dome, Capitol Records Building, Music Center, the Century City Master Plan, and countless commercial buildings throughout L.A.
The international-style building had public sculpture, a mural, and landscaping out front. And when it opened in 1955, 8,000 people toured the new headquarters to see this marvel of modern policing with state-of-the-art crime labs and communications center. And yet, half a century later, cops were thrilled to move into their new HQ on the other side of First Street. And Parker Center was slated for demolition until it wasn't. So what's happened? John Rigardi is executive editor of the Los Angeles Downtown News.
Everyone thought that the saga of Parker Center was over once the police department moved into the $440 million police administration building. It really was at a point where the city seemed to be moving forward on this project. They had plans for this 27-story office tower, I believe, at a price of more than $400 million. Then, all of a sudden, within the past few months, the preservation community came together and was able to get various city groups to consider making Parker Center a historic landmark. That has instantly slowed the process. By law, the city cannot move forward with a process to tear down this building as long as it is being considered for historic landmark status. Even if it ultimately does gain that status, it doesn't prevent the building from eventually being torn down. But it will delay it probably for at least a year and ensure that we're going to have a lot of discussion on this property for a long time.
Now, I'm looking back at one of your articles because Downtown News has done many stories on this. So we go back to 2012, and at that point, The police were so happy to be leaving the building. The building was very dilapidated. In fact, you even quote former Chief William Bratton of the LAPD joking that the best thing to do with Parker Center would be to sell it to a Hollywood studio so they could blow it up. There's really ill feeling, Welton Beckett or not.
You're exactly right. You know, what had happened is, you know, over the years, for whatever reason, this building was maintained very poorly. I don't know if some of it was tied to design issues in the first place, but, you know, for more than a decade, you know, I'd heard cops and people familiar with Civic Center buildings and real estate talking about how horrible it was. You know, even a decade ago, there were people complaining about the atrocious conditions of the jails down in the bottom of the building, exposed pipes, rats in the edifice, a lot of really ugly, dilapidated elements. And even the story that you referred to that we did in 2012, we have pictures of some of these, you know, just essentially destroyed upper offices. This building really was not maintained very well. It was falling apart. As you correctly mentioned, the police were thrilled to get out of this as soon as they could.
But you've been following downtown's amazing comeback for the last 15 years or so, and there's been a lot of buildings that one could have described in that way, maybe not jail cells, but rats and damp. And yet they've been retrofitted and they've come back as residences and so on. So the preservation community will argue that that could happen to Parker Center as well.
And the preservation community may have a very good argument. Absolutely, many other buildings that seemed that they could not come back have been brought back. There was a time the preservation community famously fought the attempt to tear down St. Vibiana's Cathedral. The archdiocese had said, this building is not safe. Preservation community led the charge against that. That building has been saved. That building is now a lovely event space and has an attached restaurant, Redbird. So there have been many, many instances, you are correct, where a historic property, a property that seemed that it did not have a future, now has a future.
This is in the hands of the City Council. Do you have a sense where they're going to be leaning on this?
I have absolutely no idea what the City Council and other city leaders are going to do with it. City leaders always step very tentatively and very carefully when there is any sort of conflict. I think a lot of people right now are going to try to get a sense of which way the political winds are blowing. They may have some private feelings, and certainly the office of the local council member, 14th District Councilman Jose Huizar, they'll probably have a big say in this. But for right now, there's been no real indication of where anyone is going to go, except that they want to hear more.
The preservation community is very vocal when it decides to get a grip on a building. Do you feel a sense of sort of frustration coming from the other side?
I'm not so sure that there is a sense of frustration coming from the other side. I think that, you know, a number of people were surprised that this developed so late in the game. You know, here even at Downtown News, we editorialized on, why did this happen now? It just speaks to some of the delays that drive people absolutely nuts when it comes to the city.
That's John Rigardi of the Los Angeles Downtown News. As the LAPD sign-off mentioned, Parker Center had served its occupants for more than half a century of the best and worst times in Los Angeles. Among the worst times were this.
Standing outside the Parker Center, the police headquarters, where protesters tore up shrubs, broke windows, and had a standoff with police last night. You might be able to see police are scattered outside the buildings right now, and over this way you might be able to see where the two-block section of the area has been barricaded.
That was 1992 and the uprising that followed the not guilty verdicts for the white police officers who'd been caught on videotape beating the African-American Rodney King. Parker Center had come to be emblematic of years of tension between non-whites and the LAPD, particularly during the years it was helmed by Chief William Parker. So you'd think people might be happy to wash their hands of a building that has a tainted history. But it's exactly that history that many preservationists say needs to be saved. Back to Cindy Olnick with the LA Conservancy.
Because it's important to recognize our full breadth of our history, not just the parts that bring us fond memories, but the parts that can also teach us important lessons. History is not always pretty. Does that mean we erase it from the landscape so we don't have these bad memories? Or do we keep it as a tangible reminder of this history so we can continue to learn from it? Clearly, we still have a lot to learn.
So what are the lessons from the building? Gail Kennard is the head of Kennard Design Group. That's one of the oldest African-American-owned architecture firms in the West, founded by her father, Robert Kennard, in the 1950s. She's also a member of the Cultural Heritage Commission that nominated the building for landmark status. She admires the architecture, and she says the building represents the complicated but important history of the LAPD.
Coming out of the Depression and Prohibition, the police were really very corrupt in many places. L.A. was a departure from that, and with the leadership of William Parker, made it a more professional department. And then we also have the connection with Tom Bradley, who was the former mayor of Los Angeles, as you know, first African-American of a major U.S. city, basically, who was a member of the L.A. Police Department from the 1940s on. And it was very much influenced, and the police department played a major part in his career.
You've presented the very positive African-American piece, the rise of Mayor Bradley. There is the less positive piece.
Okay, so the police department was a microcosm of public opinion at the time, which was basically racist. William Parker was not somebody who was going to be supporting civil rights or all that. He really had opinions, very typical of the time, that there was a problem with accelerating the advancement of African Americans and other people of color. So there's a history of the LAPD brutally occupying neighborhoods that were predominantly black and Latino. Throughout all this history, the Watts riots is a classic example, which happened at the end of William Parker's term as chief of police.
Which all emanated from Parker Center. Obviously, there was precincts all over the city, but some say tear it down for precisely that reason. Let's eradicate that memory.
Well, then I would argue against that for exactly what you're talking about. It's important to document that history so that people understand where we've come from. And we haven't even moved beyond that because we're still having issues of young African-American men being killed by police officers, not only in Los Angeles, but as we know in Ferguson, Missouri, in New York. And by preserving that history and telling the full story, not the rosy picture, but the full story, we're all better for it.
So we've certainly spoken with people who feel the history, the dark and the light, should be memorialized, but maybe just with a plaque, not with an entire building. Would that be enough?
No, that wouldn't be enough because the building itself is important. And I'll give you an example. If Capitol Records building was demolished, as iconic as that is, and it was just replaced with a plaque saying, here was the recording studio for all these amazing musicians, it wouldn't have the same impact. So I think it's really important that that we save the physical building. It's still usable. It can be adaptively reused.
Gail Kennard is the head of Kennard Design Group and member of the Cultural Heritage Commission. Hal Bastian has worked for years bringing businesses and new residents into downtown's historic district. And he says he usually supports the LA Conservancy in its preservation efforts, but not this time.
Well, we're talking about Chief Parker. And, you know, he wasn't a nice guy. And so the question is, well, if you're preserving a building, it's always going to be called Parker Center no matter what. And is that something we're saving? I'm a big believer in historic preservation when it's warranted. The issue is when is it warranted and when is it not? To me, the building doesn't ride to a standard of beauty that is important to my aesthetic taste. And this building and this site, literally Main and Main, you know, near Main and First. And probably it would be a better idea to raise that building and build a more dense structure in keeping with density of downtowns.
That's Hal Bastian. One of the people who shares Bastian's view that the site warrants more density is real estate developer and consultant Dan Rosenfeld. But he says the current debate is one we should be proud of.
The very fact that a piece of architecture and a somewhat nondescript piece of architecture is inspiring public debate about social justice, I think is a very positive reflection on architecture itself.
Back in 1997, Dan Rosenfeld was involved in an analysis of downtown's civic center that includes Parker Center.
Its design is very reflective, I think, of the city's highest ideals of itself, because public buildings, and we really need to think about this as we build more of them, are autobiographical statements. They are a chance for a community to express how it feels about its own self. They're introspective, and whether they're transparent or closed, whether they're large and looming or humble and accessible, those are all statements about how we view our civic selves. And this building came out of a time in the 1950s and 60s when modernism and mobility and certain characteristics that Angelitos like to apply to themselves do show through in the design of that building, just as the City Hall of 1927 reflects the strong ambitions, the almost grandiose ambitions of a small Western town to become the world-class city that it did.
That's Dan Rosenfeld. Currently, the city council has to consider the nomination, and then the city has to decide whether to move ahead with its planned 27-story tower or possibly settle for an option that combines the existing building with a new 11-story tower on the site of the former jail. Either way, says John Rigardi, executive editor with the LA Downtown News, there is no time to waste.
You go back about 6-7 years, and there was an entire patchwork quilt of ugly, dead, dilapidated sites. This paper used to editorialize about why can't this community, these government leaders, do something about these horrible eyesores right next to these beautiful buildings. Well, finally, due to some action and some changing market conditions, a lot is happening, and a lot is happening right around Parker Center. For example, you have Grand Park. You have the Caltrans headquarters that opened on First Street. You have the Police Administration Building that opened on First Street. Right now, the federal government is building a $400 million courthouse on what had been an ugly hole in the ground immediately west of the Los Angeles Times. Another terrible eyesore, a property that we always referred to as the Graffiti Pit, a former state office building literally right next to City Hall. That's been eradicated, and that is becoming a park as well. Then perhaps most key, last October, you had the opening of the Hall of Justice, a beautiful $200 million county project, but the building had been closed for 20 years after the Northridge earthquake. That's activated. So you have to take Parker Center in the context of all that's happening in this area. So much is occurring. There is so much opportunity to activate the streets, to get people out in all portions of the neighborhood. And yet, with Parker Center right now, probably in a stagnation period for years to come, you've got one more dead zone. So much has been solved, but this will remain a dead zone until they figure out what to do with it. There definitely needs to be movement on this project, whether it becomes saving the building and renovating it as quickly as possible, or whether it becomes tearing it down and building something new in its place. You don't want one monster-sized eyesore on Los Angeles Street in the midst of all the wonderful activity happening in this community.
So if the building were to be torn down, how about preserving some of its features? The last word goes to Cindy Olnick with the LA Conservancy.
This building is more than a plaque. It's more than the artifacts within it. It is a highly potent symbol of law enforcement in Los Angeles. Pop culture, but if you've seen Dragnet, if you've seen Columbo, if you've seen any cop show from the 70s or 80s, you've seen Parker Center.
What about those who say, why not keep parts of the structure, like the sculpt, the public art? Why not keep sort of elements of the building as a reminder?
Because that's salvage. That's not preservation.
I'm Frances Anderton, and this is DNA. Coming up after this break, what if you think a particular building is historic or culturally significant? What can you do to increase its odds of being preserved? And we'll remember Michael Graves, the designer of thousands of products who found a new voice when he lost the use of his body.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Los Angeles. We rely on listeners like you. Support the podcast you love by becoming a member. Go to kcrw.com/join.
Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. Earlier in this show, we talked about efforts to save Parker Center from demolition. So what about other buildings of architectural or historic significance in LA? Well, for several years now, the Office of Historic Resources has been making a survey of buildings and districts of note. And now the findings are available to you at Historic Places LA. That's a website created by the City of LA and the Getty Conservation Institute. You can look up buildings pre-1900 or landmarks of the entertainment industry. You can find historic districts, cultural monuments, and places on the National Historic Register. You can put in your own address and see if it pops up. Ken Bernstein heads the Office of Historic Resources, and he says they created the site to flag buildings that might warrant preservation. But what counts as worth preserving? After all, even Parker Center had not made the cut of local landmarks.
So Parker Center was not, which is why, although it had been previously identified as appearing eligible for the National Register, it was not a city historic cultural monument yet, which is why the Cultural Heritage Commission felt compelled to put this forward.
Are there any other sites in LA that might be analogous to Parker in terms of bringing up mixed reactions?
Years ago, I was, and you might recall, involved with the debate around the Ambassador Hotel site. The debate about whether to preserve the Ambassador as part of a new school project that LAUSD was proposing that was ultimately built. So the Ambassador Hotel was demolished. And part of that debate really was about the painful memory of the Robert F. Kennedy assassination on that site. And in fact, there were Kennedy family members and Kennedy family friends who came out in support of demolition. Often it is difficult to deal with sites of painful memory. And we were reminded during that time on the Ambassador Hotel that even the Texas School Book Depository in Dallas was threatened with demolition in the 1970s. Again, Dallas residents wanting to erase that very painful chapter of their history.
And then a more positive memory was attached, I guess, most recently to Ray Bradbury's house, which became a big source of upset a few weeks ago when the new owners demolished it.
Exactly. That really is what Historic Places LA is all about, to capture and then flag that information up front before there is a proposed demolition. And the other mechanism that's in place now in Los Angeles, tied in with the launch of Historic Places LA, is the City Council passed a demolition notification ordinance under which any building 45 years old or older cannot be demolished without notification of...
45 years takes us back to 1970. That period of architecture is not well loved by everybody. We're getting to a place in the kind of preservation evolution where now we're talking about saving buildings from an era that weren't necessarily well loved.
Well, that's always the case. And I think some do look at modern architecture, look at a building like Parker Center, and some might say it's a very simple streamlined box. And it's not ornate architecture. And as we get into the 1970s, we're getting into, at times, the beginnings of postmodern design and the even less loved style often called brutalism, which we're having preservation debates around the country around some of that 1970s concrete brutalist style. But it's always the case that the immediate past generation of architecture tends to be what's reviled, and we saw that perhaps in the immediate era that Art Deco architecture was scorned for many years, a couple of decades after it debuted in the 1920s and 30s. We saw Victorian architecture in the turn of the 20th century, a turn away from that with the simpler craftsman movement and other styles. Architecture is often most vulnerable during that kind of in-between period before when you have a little bit of a sense of perspective, maybe 20 to 40 years after the original construction and other styles have come into fashion. That is when you really need to kind of take a step back and look at what is and is not significant from that period before it's cleared away. Because when something is out of fashion, doesn't mean it's not necessarily also significant and might have new appreciation later.
That's Ken Bernstein. He's manager of the Office of Historic Resources in the Los Angeles Department of City Planning. You can check thousands of historic buildings in LA at historicplacesla.org. You're listening to DNA. I'm Frances Anderton. And speaking of buildings that get new appreciation later in their lives, there's currently a battle in Oregon over the Portland building. That colorful postmodern office building was a game changer in its day, the early 80s, but soon became despised by many. Well, now there's a new generation calling for it to be saved from demolition. That Portland building was designed by Michael Graves, the architect and designer who made his name first with buildings that upended serious and, in his view, alienating modern architecture. Then he got into designing friendly-looking products and went on to create thousands, most famously for Target and Alessi. You may have owned some of his cookware or chirpy-looking kettles. But his life changed dramatically in 2013, prompting a new path that made perhaps his most profound impact on society. Earlier this month, Michael Graves died at age 80. In memory of his contribution, we revisited an earlier DNA interview in which he talked about that part of his life.
10 years ago, I contracted a sinus infection, and that caused a paralysis in the lower half of my body. I was in 8 hospitals and 4 rehab centers, and one was worse than the next, and we were looking for somebody to tell me what was wrong with me and how I might walk again. That didn't happen, but in the course of time, I found out that American hospitals are not what they are cracked up to be. And so I thought of all the things I can do in the rest of my life, I ought to be able to take on healthcare in a very big way. And I wanted to do something about it. And of course, with humanism as my background in architecture and design, that works out brilliantly for me.
And by humanism, you mean human-centered. Does that mean that hospitals, as you see it, are not human-centered?
Some things are a little bit askew. And or another way of looking at it is the healthcare magazines that we get monthly always have a picture of a new atrium on the cover. It's almost comical. And they don't even show the patient room. And you find that oftentimes they run out of money by the time they get to the patient room. And they're too small and they're therefore cramped with many of the things that they should have and they don't have. And places for the clinicians and the nurses all to get around and for the patient themselves to be comfortable.
Michael Graves redesigned hospital furniture and wheelchairs. And he created houses for wounded warriors.
The Wounded Warriors was really a wonderful job that came to us and I think to me because not that I'm wounded, but I have paralysis and therefore I'd be empathetic to what the soldiers coming back from the war would need. Now, they do have paralysis. They have quadriplegia. They have burns. They have near blindness. They have a lot of different problems. So we needed to make a house that could accommodate, not one that would provide for, but accommodate all of those people. So the first people that moved into one house was a Marine who had lost his legs. So we did everything in that house for somebody with amputee issues, and that then would lead to other things that amputee would be like a little bit like me, in that I have very bad circulation in the lower half of my body and good circulation in the upper half of my body, which means that when a room is cold for you, it might be warm for me and the reverse. And so it meant that we had to have more zones of heat and cool in the house, which raises the cost a little bit. We also needed to have the corridors be wide enough so that you could do a 360-degree turn. We also needed to bring the windows down near the baseboard, but not all the way. That was for the people with post-traumatic stress disorder, where they wanted to know that they were safe in the house and that it wasn't a door that somebody could come in the middle of the night. And at the same time, you need to make a house that doesn't scream from the street, somebody with disabilities lives here. I wanted to make houses that looked absolutely normal.
That was Michael Graves talking to DNA in 2013. He died on March 12th at age 80. There will be a memorial for him on April 12th at Princeton University. There he taught for 39 years. That's it for today's DNA. The show was produced by Caroline Chamberlain and mixed by Ray Guana. Special thanks to Jason Grohman. Find more DNA on our blog at kcrw.com/DNA. And follow All Things DNA on our Facebook page at KCRW's Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. Thank you very much for listening.